Thank you, Bob. And thanks to Bob and Leroy for inviting me. I always enjoy speaking with these seminars because this is such a... I'm interested in a synthesis of all the work that has to be done to go into this kind of these kind of studies. Use the page down. So let's talk about light, water, and temperature dynamics in row and inter-row zones. And the work that other colleagues I'm working with is Dave Fleischer, an engineer with us, and Sue, who's developed the Mason model that I'll discuss, and our research leader, Dr. Reddy. Got the right one there. Don't have the right one. I'm sorry. There you go. Okay. So we talk. I'm going to talk about dimensionality in our research. And you know, I've come across this book once called Flatland, which is a book about a world where only two dimensions existed. And so all the people who inhabit this world were different shapes. Like you had squares, rectangles, and the more sides you have, the higher your status. So, and you imagine if you live in a world like this, you really don't know what a third dimension is because your whole world is just that second, those two dimensions. And it actually can go down to a one-dimensional world where every person's a point. Or then the next one where you're a line. And so what happened in this world, they found that there was a third dimension, and everyone was pretty surprised when there was a dimension of height. So I think this concept of dimensionality really affects how our dimensionality that we live in affects the dimensionality of how we look at the world. So if you look at it, we have multidimensional approaches can allow to more complete what I call abstraction of a system, which is what we think of when we develop models of our systems. So we think about a soil profile, you have that depth kind of aspect to it, but there's also another third dimension that adds a sort of amount more complexity. And so as you get increase in dimensionality, what happens, you have more information and complexity in your system. There's more you have to think about. Actually, more problems arise. You make more mistakes as well. So you have more potential error, but you have to balance that with a more complete view of the system. So there are benefits of accounting for dimensionality in our research. Is you can look at the variation in boundary conditions in space. So you have fluxes of energy and matter that vary in space, plant root dynamics, and the variation in space, in the state of the system in space as well, sort of row crops, spatial variability in soil properties, things like wheel tracks. And these interact with each other. So the variation in row crops, for example, will give you fluxes of energy and matter that vary in space, and differences in plant root dynamics. So wheel tracks can cause things of that, the differences of that nature as well. So the interaction of these two is what makes life interesting for us, and it allows us to develop management practices for more efficient use of our resources. And I guess the whole solar corridor concept is involved with that, with the variation of our management in space by how we plant our row crops that then translates back to the variation in light interception and translation to dry matter. So if we look at a two-dimensional system in row crops, we have sort of a uniform boundary condition above, which is rainfall. But that plant, the presence of the plant in the soil can change how that rainfall is distributed in the rows. So we have things like drip irrigation that can impose another variation. So water can be captured by the plant canopy and just infiltrate in certain parts, or it can run off into furrows. So the paper once, when I was a postdoc with Lodge, Ahuja, we found a paper that showed that variation of the water contents varied by row position. This is that Van Weissenbeck, Wiesenbach and Kachanowski had done, and it sort of got the idea of how can I quantify these differences. And so I did a study once in Beltsville with looking at soybean, where I put some TDR probes in the field, and we looked at, we have two plots, A and B, that I instrumented over the season, and row and inter-row locations with the two plots. And so I took all the infiltration events and looked at them. I'm sorry? Okay. I looked at all the infiltration events and see that in the, and this is summation as you go from here, you go into deeper summation among deeper depths. So this is a summation from 0 to 10, 0 to 25, and 0 to 40. It's done because the probes were inserted downward into the soil. And you see that in the row positions that the water is infiltrating more deeply in both cases. And this has to do with the plant intercepting the water. And if you look at plant water uptake, you get a similar, that as you aggregate over the depth, in the row positions, you're getting more water uptake than in the inter-row position. So there's that aspect that you're getting, you're getting more water in the row position as well as more water uptake in the two, and that's a sort of distribution of the uniform boundary flux that's then distributed non-uniformly. So I did some work with Jim Starr, and I did some work with tillage and water contents, measuring water contents under different tillage treatments, and you can see what happens if you have, there you go. And this is, you have no-till on this side and tillage on the plow till on the right. You see what happens with no-till, because of the distribution of the residues on the surface, you tend to distribute those water contents after rainfall much more than with plow till. So you don't get as much differences among the different row positions. But you do see again that there's a You do see that there's still in the inter-row zones, in the row zone, which the open circles on the left here, you're getting more water uptake again in the row zone than the inter-row zones, and it's pretty consistent over both tillage treatments. So we want to look at this in more detail. So we took a cornfield near us and we instrumented it with TDR probes and temperature sensors. And here's I also treated the field with two levels of nitrogen, so I'd get a dense canopy in one section and sort of a lighter canopy in the other section to look at the effect of the canopy on the dynamics of these of temperature and water content. And some of the TDR probes we placed, if you look in the lower right-hand corner, we placed right next to the plant and also between plants to see what the effects of the canopy capture. And I have, and the results I'm going to show is an average of four locations for each place. And so that gives you an idea what happened as the plant grew with the difference in nitrogen, how it resulted in different canopies. And so I also laid out from light bars, and I did this over 2 years, laid out some light bars along with a row to look at the distribution of light interception in these two areas. And for these, I collected some measurements of 3 to 4 days and sampled plant LEI. And that was in 2006. 2005 was this water studies I'm going to show you come from 2005. But if you see with you can see that with no nitrogen, as you look at the filled circles in the top are the light interception in the morning and evening. And so it's pretty much because the canopy, the light's coming at an angle, there's a lot of interception by the canopy of the light. But midday, which is the open circles, there's all open in the middle. So you find that there's much less light interception. So you have sort of a lot of bare soil there, essentially. Looking at low nitrogen, you're getting a little more light interception in the center, but again, the plants aren't any different in the evening, so there's still the nitrogen doesn't make any difference in the evening and morning when the light angles are not quite straight down. And then I show that there's a high nitrogen one. I dropped that graph out, but it shows pretty much more light interception. So if we look at the temperature differences between the low nitrogen and high nitrogen, you can see that that in the inter-row you're getting higher temperatures both with high nitrogen and low nitrogen, but with the low nitrogen, or this one is a no nitrogen treatment, you're getting much higher temperatures in the inter-row zone because that area is bare now, it's intercepting. And the temperature differences are up about 5 degrees, that's for midday. And most of the temperatures are a bit higher, even closer to the crop, because the soil's drier. As it dries, it tends to heat up more as well. If you look at the water contents, you have the placement by the soil surface. You see again that there's the blue is the no nitrogen and the red is the high nitrogen, and you're getting somewhat more water uptake from the high nitrogen, and that the difference varies by the inter-row, the plant, and the plant row. Now the plant is where we have the TDR probe right up against the plant, and the plant row is between the plants. So there's more intense differences of water uptake right under the plant as opposed to the plant row and the inter-row places. But you can see the effect in the plant especially of the increase in infiltration right under the plant under rainfalls. Now at 20 centimeter depths, you can see still this becomes even a little more accentuated, the differences in water uptake. And this is actually between, these are probes that are spread between the rows, actually. So we're looking at ideas to go look at this, we'll look at a two-dimensional model, and will a two-dimensional model give us similar results? And the results of it, we don't calibrate the models, it's just all our parameters were derived from our soil, our growth chamber and field and literature data that we have. So our model's MASEM, which it has a two-dimensional soil model that's developed from Hydrus2D. We, Jakub Pachepski and I developed it, which we call 2D soil. And it has a above-ground photosynthesis and leaf growth model that was developed by Soo Kim, is a postdoc with us, when he was a postdoc with us. And so it has two-dimensional simulations allow us to make a preliminary assessment of how a particular management practice can affect the fate of chemicals. We can look at nutrient interception with alternate row irrigation, degradation of chemicals is related to differences in temperature in row and inter-row positions, preferential flow and return of chemicals to the root zone, application to compare crop management practices, and interactions among root growth, water dynamics, and management. So if you look at the model, it does give us the differences with in the inter-row and plant row. If you look at the differences in water uptake, this is sort of similar to what we saw in the measured data. So it does give us higher water uptake in the plant row than in the inter row, and the differences, it's not really evident from this graph, but just show the differences between the high end and the no end treatments because of the differences in simulated canopy size. And this is against the measured data. Of course, it's a little bit, our simulations are somewhat more water uptake than the measured data, but it pretty much tracks the similar changes in this system. So if we look at temperature in the measured and the plant row, we simulate the similar differences in temperature because it's mainly the heat balance that results from this. You have an open canopy. The open canopy has more radiation hitting the inter-row zones, which results in more evapotranspiration and the more temperature differences. And these temperature differences can translate into different effects of say organic matter decomposition, residue decomposition, things of that nature. And so if we're modeling the management effects, using one application of doing this is looking at irrigation between alternative regular furrow irrigation. It shows how the model responds, which if you have irrigation on one side, it'll sort of put most of the roots where the irrigation is. If you have irrigation on both sides of the right panel, it'll distribute the roots a little more evenly. So the model will distribute roots where the water is. This is a simulation showing simultaneous water and nutrient uptake. On the left graph is water, is where the water dynamics, and the right is where the nitrogen is being taken up. And you see the nitrogen is pretty much taken up where there's more water. So as the water content is depleted in the surface, you'll see the nitrogen uptake begin moving downward, and where there's more water in the root activity in that direction. Every time you add water in the surface, the you saw more nutrient uptake there, and that's because of the way the model is defined, that you have water uptake as a function of differences in matrix potential in the soil and root density. So you have soil density differences caused by water content differences, and then there's the root itself has resistance in it. So the roots closer to the surface have lower resistance, so if the soil's wetter near the surface, you're more likely to have water uptake from that component. So the plant canopy has a significant effect on water regimes in the row and inter-row positions, and there are large differences in cumulative infiltration between the row and inter-row positions. More water infiltrated in the row position, and the differences varied with rainfall intensities. We have that some other tables that show that. It wasn't so clear from the graphs I had here. But the water infiltrated deeper in the row zone, but the net effect on water storage did depend on the rainfall dynamics. You know, that essentially, the light rainfalls, you tend to get not as much canopy interception. It drips off sort of a more even rate than if you have heavy rainfalls. And so the incomplete plant canopy can change the distribution of temperature and water content in the surface soil, but they can be modeled so that the management practices can be developed and assessed based on this. So when the plant is actually growing, the boundary fluxes of evapotranspiration and infiltration and their interaction with the plant may be more important to determine the soil water regime, what's happening on, than the soil hydraulic properties themselves. So that you have very strong differences in boundary conditions. So we often don't see the dimensionality of plants in the field, but understanding of how this affects the plant environment can better help us manage the crop better. So I discussed a limited view of current research, and recently 3D models have become available, and we always think, okay, let's go to more complexity. It's going to be some more problems, though, but I think 3D models can give us another ability to look at different facets of light interception, for example. And measurement methods to quantify the two- and three-dimensional processes are continually improving. And so once we can measure these things, we can better develop better models. So thank you very much. And this is a video of, if it comes out, of a plant growing. Well, it's funny how they work on your computer but not here. But actually, it's a video of a 3D plant growing And we'd like to sort of go with our modeling, it's come to that next stage of having a functional model that shows actual 3D plant that we can trace light rays and such for it and things of that nature. Okay, thank you.
We have time for a few questions.
The temperatures they measured, they were hourly temperatures. I actually measured them every 15 minutes, and I averaged over hours. And then the model itself runs in an hourly time step. So we input the, and for this case, the weather data were also input in an hourly time step.
There's a couple of charts where you had, like, days, strings of the days. How did you put the hourly temperature?
Okay, yes, that was a daily average. I'm sorry. We did measure them on hourly, but I averaged it just to keep the graph from getting too messy. But no, that the water contents, no, they were hourly that I output them. Yeah, that's right. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jay, there was another question back here. Go ahead.
You can go first if you want. No problem.
Okay.
Just throw a coin. In the front, there's time for both questions. In the
go ahead, Jay. Yeah, well, the tillage study was a silt loam. It was a Matapex silt loam for that was in part of the South Farm in Beltsville, and this other one was a sandy loam, pretty sandy soil outwash. So that yes, it would the soybean what I showed the first ones that was a clay loam. So it is the soil was not much of an issue as much as a plant on the top. I mean, the texture might vary how fast the water is lost and uptake. But it didn't really affect too much on what the how that plant interception worked. Richard?
Yeah. Bringing more complexity or trying to understand all the complexity may not bring, you know, added value. Or maybe yes. But I guess my question is, have you tested how much more we are gaining by adding complexity versus the trade-off of making something very complex and very specific and therefore not be able to use that model across a wide range of environments?
Well, see, my own approach is, and my own feeling, and this is not really, this is sort of a question of model complexity, what advantage we get from model complexity. If you look at most agricultural models now, what does everyone do in any kind of time they present it? They say, we spent this year calibrating it, then we spend this year using it. So you don't see any studies, and so that's a complexity there that kind of, I think, is really not very useful for us. And so if we can accept, I always wonder if a lot of those just use some standard set of parameters, how much different would it be? And my idea is, how much can we make, can we get a balance in complexity and then a need to validate all the time? And there are certain, for example, when you, depending on the scale of how you collect the data, there are certain ways of, there are certain, we can collect data, I think, that we can get idea of how it works over a wide range of conditions. And then make that more, that way that when we make the model, the equations in the model are not so specific for one location, which a lot of models that comes out now, they are. And I think that a lot, and also it's just a matter, it's very subjective as well. It's sort of at the end, what can I do with the model and how much am I willing to work with it? It depends on the person a lot. And it's a good question, Patricio, and I wouldn't know how to answer, but I think it's personal and you have to, and it comes on a case-by-case basis. And that's, we're struggling with that for modeling all the time. I see. Good. Thank you.
Anyway, I have to cut the discussion here until the panel discussion at the end, so we stay on schedule. Thank you very much.
You.